Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice. Okay, everybody, we are on episode 41. Have a plan for after divorce. No plan is the worst plan for that day.
It's one thing to know it's coming and then to hear it. And then all of a sudden, okay, reality's here.
Well, that's it. And I'm done.
And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce.
And today what we're talking about is somebody who's wonderful, who just wrote a book entitled, I Bought My Husband's Mistress Lingerie. Yes, that's the title. That's the juiciness. She's coming on. We can't wait. But before we do, on the How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast, we need to talk about what we're obsessed with.
Oh, yeah.
I love this segment because it brings about things that we didn't even know we needed.
Things that we're literally obsessed with.
Okay, I'm going to make it short and sweet.
Okay.
I was thinking today, I'm like, all right, what am I going to talk about? What do I really like? So I'm going day to day, thinking about my day. You know what it is today? It's something that I eat almost every day.
What?
It's called Skinny Pop popcorn. And, you know, I'm sure that you eat it all the time too.
Oh my God.
It's amazing. I think it came from Chicago. I've tried all the different popcorn brands. I love it. It's, you know, probably healthier than potato chips. And I highly recommend it. Although the one knock I have on it, the bags always seem half full. Always.
You mean because of all the air that's in it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. So I highly recommend Skinny Pop. It's great for a snack or even lunch if you're on the run. So that's my obsessed because I actually eat it all the time.
I love Skinny Pop too. And they have the kettle corn flavor, the regular flavor. It's a nice salty treat that's very low in calories.
That's right. And I will add one other thing. Skinny Pop, if you're hearing us, you should do a truffle salt one because that's my favorite. I make it on my own with your Skinny Pop and I don't see it on the shelves yet. So we're giving you good ideas.
Oh my God. I love it. All right. Skinny Pop, from Skinny Pop to lingerie.
Yes. If you eat the Skinny Pop, you can wear lingerie.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and pop our way over into this interview, shall we?
Let's do it.
Today's interview is with the author of I Bought My Husband's Mistress Lingerie. Her name is Stacy Freeman. And yeah, it's a true story. But it's not just a story about deceit and infidelity.
There's a lot of beauty and a lot of hope in this book, and that's why we are having her on our show today.
And you know, obviously, I hear a lot about this topic with my own clients, and I love that we can offer our listeners an interview with somebody who wrote about this topic with not only transparency and candor, but also with such a positive outlook at the end. Stay with us because there's a good ending here.
There really is. And I'm so excited for this interview today. I've been like really pumped about it for a while. Stacey Freeman, welcome to How Not to Suck at Divorce.
Thank you so much for having me. I cannot wait to talk about this book and, you know, everything that goes with divorce and positivity.
All right. So, Stacey, I would like to jump right in here, if you don't mind. I want to start with our listeners, if you don't mind, just to read an excerpt of your book that beautifully sets the stage of what we're talking about today.
Okay. So, I will start here. This is part of the first chapter. My husband's suitcase had sat on the floor of our master bedroom where it always did while he was home, waiting to be unpacked after weeks, sometimes a couple of months, spent away. Business trips, I used to call them, instead of admitting what they were, a geographical separation, with him working on one side of the world and me living on the other. A strain on our marriage, no doubt, but when we agreed to this plan, we compared ourselves to military couples who spend long periods away from one another while still remaining committed. Yet somehow during these furloughs, my husband's suitcase would never be unpacked. Instead, only its contents rotated and preparation made for the next business trip. It was a statement, his, that our house was no longer home. During this last visit, the one that would mark the end of our marriage, I had walked past his open suitcase for days, annoyed as I always was that not only had he failed to unpack it, but that he hadn't even moved it into our walk-in closet. Unlike those other visits, right before this one, my husband announced he was done with our marriage, leaving me to question whether he had already met somebody else. My husband denied any involvement, and I chose to believe him. Never before did I have a reason not to. But on that particular evening, the appearance of his suitcase struck me as odd. At first, I couldn't put my finger on why. It was only when I walked past it for what was probably the 100th time that week that I stopped dead in my tracks. My husband was never one for neatness, and I saw what was different. The cover, though left unzipped, was now closed. I don't know what made me look inside, since I never had in the past. But as I lifted the top, I noticed the familiar pink striped bag shoved in between his clothes. Inside, you guessed it, a red satin nightie with black lace trim. Born a fair-skinned strawberry blonde, I was told my entire life how red wasn't my color. As a baby, my mother dressed me almost entirely in pale pinks and soft greens. And for most of my adult life, I abided by that same tradition. The lingerie I held in my trembling hands wasn't for me. With the vengeance of a woman scorned, I grabbed for my scissors and cut into the fabric, the sound of each breaking thread mimicking the sound of the life I knew being torn to shreds. When I was done, I carefully wrapped the defiled nightie back in its tissue paper, placed it in the bag, and returned the bag to the suitcase, no one ever the wiser. I imagined my husband's mistress opening her gift with excitement, this gesture of romantic love, only to discover that it had been destroyed. The next morning, I confessed my sin. You know, my husband advised with the tutelage of a sage, I'm only going to buy her another one. And that's when I said it. I'll do it.
Wow. Oh, my God. Okay. All right, we're going to keep this moving. So you go to Victoria's Secret and you buy your husband's mistress that same piece of lingerie that you cut. Okay.
That's correct. Okay.
Wait,
as crazy as it seems.
Yeah. Wait, the same piece, the same size,
identical.
Because she was rebuying it, because that's what happened, because she cut it And then he sees that she caught it and he says to her, Morgan, I'm only going to rebuy it. And that's when Stacy said, no, I'll do it. I'll rebuy it.
But didn't any part of your head in your head be like, you know what? I'm going to rebuy it in an XL or an extra small. Like, and then I'm going to repackage it up and put it back in there.
No. I remember just standing there talking to him, and you're having one of those kind of out of body experiences. Like you see yourself, and you know, I'm having this interaction with him where he said, I'm only going to buy her another one. And he said it very calmly and very matter of fact, as he always is. And it was like there was an inevitability there that I knew I needed to face. And did I want to be this crazy redhead? Yeah. So I remember driving myself to the mall. Uh-huh. And I remember walking in and, you know, asking for this piece, and the saleswoman ushering me over to this part of the store, and like, there it was.
Oh my God.
And she's like, what size, you know? And I knew, like, I wasn't buying it for myself. And I bought it. I paid for it and I came home. And
I just want to know, where were you numb during that whole transaction? Do you remember?
Oh, totally.
Like, okay, so you hadn't really processed the gravity of the situation. It was kind of just like going through the motions of, I said I was going to rebuy it, I'm buying it, and then I'm going to figure out everything else after. What do you remember?
It's hard to really pinpoint exactly how I was feeling, because there was such a rush of emotions when, you know, I finally kind of got wind of what was going on. You know, when he, you know, finally, you know, admitted that there was somebody else, I was in absolute shock, because I had met my husband when I was 15 years old.
Yeah.
So I had never dated anybody. I was only with him. I was 39 years old when this happened. I had no other life really apart from my childhood without him. So much of my teenage years were with him. I grew up with him and I trusted him like you could never trust anybody. That, you know, I had this incredible trust. I would never think that this person could ever do something like this. So, you know, there was a rush of emotions, but I knew somehow deep inside of me that, like, I did not want to, you know, be this angry person. And mind you, I got plenty angry at different times moving forward. So, you know, to say that, oh, okay, I'm going to be this, you know, happy soon to be ex-wife, that's not how it goes. But somewhere in me, I knew that to be this angry person was not going to serve me and my three children.
That is so interesting. We just did an episode about the stages of anger when there's infidelity. And you said exactly what the doctor said, which was, it's like an up and down rodeo, for lack of a better term. Some days are great. Other days you're more than angry. Other days you're sad. And there's not like a roadmap for this type of betrayal or anger. But I love that you're telling our listeners, in the end, you had a plan and you knew that you didn't, who you didn't want to be in the end, but you did have to go through those emotions to get there. But my question is, so after all of this, how soon after this incident, when you're at Victoria's Secret buying lingerie, did somebody file for divorce?
Okay, so that's another interesting question. But I do want to just go back for 1 second and say that I didn't really have a plan. I had a sense. Okay, so we all can make plans, but I just had this like kind of inner feeling.
That's a good clarification.
Yeah. Who filed for divorce? Okay, well, so my ex-husband had not really been living in the house. He was commuting, in air quotes, back and forth to Hong Kong, where he was living and working. So we were more heavy on the Hong Kong side than the US side, but we were absolutely married. We were away on a family vacation just weeks before in Florida. So after he went back to Hong Kong, he kind of said he needed to see this through, whatever he was doing over there.
What does that mean?
That's what I said. So see this through, see what happened. He needed to explore this relationship he was having.
Oi.
So here I am in my house. I have my kids who are 11, 10, and 6 at the time.
Okay.
I am deeply embedded in my community. My children are in elementary school. So he leaves. I still have to make breakfast. I still have to clean my house. I still have to function because I have 3 people depending on me. Okay. So, you know, what did I do? Well, you know, I was like, okay, I need to have, now we talk about a plan. Okay. Yeah. Now I've had a moment to process this. Okay, what's going to happen next? He's not giving me much information. So what did I do? I started visiting lawyers. Okay. So, you know, I asked around, I got a short list of people and I started making appointments pretty much immediately.
Okay.
So within, I would say about 6 days after he left, I retained somebody. But I did so with the caveat that I may not be using you. I paid a retainer, but I said, I don't know what's going to happen here. I want to let things play out. Therefore, I did not tell my husband I had a lawyer, but I wanted to, you know, take steps that just in case I would have my ducks in a row, because I had always been a planner. And, you know, just in case, and I wasn't, you know, doing anything. In fact, you know, we talk about how to prepare for divorce. And I think one of the first things you do is to wrap your brain around the, you know, that this could happen, but also to find, you know, a lawyer that you're comfortable with. And that when you talk to different lawyers, you get a lot of different approaches and a lot of different personalities.
Yep.
And I spoke to one and he was like, oh my God, we're going to do this, that, and the other thing. And it was all very adversarial. And I said, thank you very much, and walked out.
This is so funny. We talked exactly about this topic in a previous episode of this season, where we talk about the things that you should look for when you're talking to a divorce attorney. And one of the things you don't want is somebody who enters a case with guns blazing, because that doesn't help anybody. So I love that you did this yourself.
Yeah. This one attorney was like the Ray Liotta character in Marriage Story. And so I'm sitting there like, what?
I ran.
And so, you know, I let things kind of play out. I had my lawyer. I didn't do anything with him. And, you know, you talk about how you want to kind of organize your files, and mine were really organized because I handled all the bills in our house. I ran our household from start to finish. So, you know, I knew where things were. I knew it. The one who didn't really know how to pay the electric bill was my husband. So, you know, I just kind of wrapped my brain around and just kind of sat there. But it was funny because I had gone to Walgreens to buy a gift card. And, you know, during the few months between when my husband went back to Hong Kong and before I actually told him I had a lawyer, and I had emotion pouring out of me. So I would kind of tell everybody what was going on in my life. And I'm not that way generally. And I was talking to 2 women while I was picking out a gift card for a birthday party for one of my kids. And the woman said to me, oh, you should buy a lot of gift cards and charge them on your credit card.
Here comes.
And start hoarding them. And I was like, why? And she's like, you know, you'll be able to kind of collect money. And I said, this sounds like ridiculous. This is like a Band-Aid on a broken leg. Like, what is this going to do? And it's unethical for one thing. And I just looked at her and I was like, no. So none of that, you know, and it's like people will say crazy things to you, and you really have to discern where the advice is coming from.
Again, it's so funny. You're touching on so many things that we have talked about in different episodes of this show. And I love that in the book, you really really eloquently show like what your process looked like as you navigated the divorce, being you were holding down that house. Like you were running the show, and you had to, there's so many things that you had to do while divorcing someone who spent the majority of the time thousands of miles away. I want to jump.
He didn't. That came later. That came 2 years almost to the day that he left.
Wasn't he still traveling though? Wasn't he still traveling?
Yes, when this happened.
That's what I mean.
He had started living over there exactly 2 years before, but he had always traveled a lot during our marriage, but we all lived together in the same house.
Yeah. Let's move, just because we can't read the whole book, even though I wish you could, but I want to move everyone to the day that you got divorced. So we're going to jump ahead, because this was that when I read this part, I had chills. So let's jump to that part of your memoir, just to share with everybody what that was like for you.
Okay. So to kind of set the stage for this, I got divorced in New Jersey while my almost ex-husband was in Hong Kong. So although I was in a courtroom, he was, you know, on speakerphone over there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I felt very isolated and just very alone. I had my lawyer there, obviously, but it was just this surreal experience. So I'll read from the book. I spent more than a year planning for that day, my divorce day, attending countless meetings with lawyers, forensic accountants, financial planners, marriage counselors, and therapists. But really, nothing could have prepared me for that morning, that single moment when the first chapters of my life would finally come to a close. As I stood in the courtroom before a judge, answering rote queries from my lawyer, those silly factual inquiries whose answers were already known but were still required to extricate me from my marriage. On what date were you married? How many children do you have together? My husband, listening via a conference call from his comfortable new home in his comfortable new life 8,000 miles away. I felt an overwhelming sense of foreboding. There I was, now middle-aged, about to be thrust alone into the world for, in essence, the first time in my life. With each stabbing question, my uncertain future drew closer until I officially, however begrudging I was forced to accept and settle for my new title, divorced. Unlike my wedding, there was no fanfare following my divorce, no music, no celebration. Only quiet. A friend who divorced weeks earlier had just recalled to me how her ex-husband called minutes after their proceeding ended. Like mine, it took place via conference call with a husband who had likewise relocated to Asia without her. As I exited the courthouse, a part of me secretly hoped I would receive such a call, but my cell phone never rang. There was no heartfelt goodbye, no apologies exchanged. No nod to the years we spent together. No closure, only the deafening silence of our broken promises.
Wow. That's a lot. Do you think
I didn't cry.
You did a great job reading that. I'm sure that was so emotional. One of my questions is, do you think that if you did get that call, would that have given you the closure you wanted?
It would have been something. It would have been something, and the closest I ever got was, I am sorry you feel bad, which we know is not a real apology. So, you know, all of these things sound very trite, you know, when you say them, but you really have to give yourself the apology. You can't wait for somebody else to apologize for you, because that will keep you stagnated. So I stopped waiting at some point. The call didn't come, and that was a signal. It's not going to come.
Right, right. Morgan, I want to know, what was it like for you hearing Stacy read about her experience the day the divorce was finalized? Because you've stood next to so many clients on that day.
Yep.
Is it interesting to hear it from this other perspective of having to answer those questions in front of a judge, that to you, that's like part of the gig, right? Like, you know that that's coming. What would, like, did anything come up for you?
Yeah, you know, I'm not like this hardened divorce lawyer still, even though probably I should doing it this long. But, you know, I felt emotional for what you just read. I felt bad for you. And good divorce lawyers still have feelings. And we see our clients at the end of the rope going through some of that. But, you know, you're one of many emotions that I experience. I experience that. On the flip side, I've experienced couples that literally high five each other the minute the judge says they're divorced. I've experienced couples that run out of the courtroom together and go have cocktails to celebrate their next chapter in life together. I have people that can barely make it through the divorce proceedings. So, you know, it runs the gamut. And I don't think anyone will truly know where they'll be on that day until they're there, because so many emotions just bubble up that you're not expecting. And it could be happy or sad. But I do always say to anyone, have a plan for after the divorce, meaning that day. No plan is the worst plan for that day. Do something nice for yourself, whether it's a massage or meeting a friend or, you know, having a little dinner with somebody. Have some sort of plan, because however you're feeling, it will help you at the end of the day, having something to do.
It is. I think we talked about this once on the show and I don't remember, but I got divorced when everything was shut down. My divorce was finalized during the height of the pandemic. So I got divorced from the floor of my kid's closet via Zoom. I hung up the Zoom call, was divorced, walked into my kitchen, wiped away tears, and had to help my then kindergartner with virtual school. And I remember I was so, like, I was shaking, and I just thought, like, what is this life? I just got divorced on the floor of his closet. And now I'm out here singing songs about words that rhyme with can, you know? And I'm like, okay, the show must go on. And then I remember a friend of mine came over and dropped off a coffee for me, but she couldn't stay long because she had to go and, you know, do stuff in her day. And it just felt like it was so, I felt so isolated. It was such a terrible, it's weird. It's weird when you think you're going to have this like big moment and it doesn't really happen like that. It's like a process of closure and healing. And I feel like for me, the day that I signed the papers felt really big. And then, you know, the prove up date to me felt almost like anticlimactic because it was virtual, you know, but I love the way that you wrote about that experience. And I think that it's so important for people who are listening to the show right now. One of the things that I love about her book is that it helps you see what you experienced from a totally different perspective. And I think that that's something that's important for everyone to have, is that no two divorces look alike. No two love stories look alike. No two post-divorce love stories look alike. But I love it. And I also have to tell people that I sat and read this entire book at a bar, cover to cover, over a few glasses of wine, because I mean, Stacey, I could not put this down. I tore through this. I just found each chapter more and more relatable. I mean, of course, it doesn't hurt that you're a Jewish girl from New York, but but like, you know, I was so into this, and I want to keep this moving, and I want to talk about how you didn't lose your faith in love. And I think that for people who are going through a divorce, I think that's like the fear. You know, Morgan said before, just because I'm a divorce attorney doesn't mean I don't have a heart. I'm not a hardened person, but getting divorced makes you kind of hard.
Definitely.
It can make you kind of jaded. And I know I've talked to a lot of people that write to me and they're like, do you think I'm ever going to be in love ever again? Like, am I even going to want to be in love? Am I ever going to want to be touched again? So will you read that part of the book where you talk about not losing your faith and being loved the way you want to be loved?
Sure. Okay. So I kind of jumped into dating, you know, a few months after you know, mm-hmm. whether or not this is right or wrong, this was just, you know, what I was feeling in the moment and I went with it. So, you know, if you're that person who wants to put it off for a little bit, or you feel like that, you know, is where you want to be, like, don't beat yourself up. Like, there's no right answer to any of this. So, right. You know, I started dating and, you know, I was definitely, you know, emotional and, you know, I didn't even know what I wanted or what I needed or what I was supposed to get. I had never dated before. So things that people did like in high school, you know, and college, like I never did. So I had no idea. And all of a sudden, you know, I went on J date and we all know how that is. So, yeah. So it was a whole new world for me. So, okay. So I'll read from the book. What I do believe is that we can choose whether we continue to love. When we love someone who doesn't love us in return, at least not in the way that we want or deserve, who doesn't treat us well and who doesn't make us feel good, we cannot love with all our heart. So we don't actually love, we pine. Which means all along that we haven't been open to meeting the one we're meant to love, the one who will love us back wholeheartedly. Perhaps it's because we weren't yet ready. Perhaps it's because the timing wasn't quite right. Perhaps it's because we simply hadn't met him yet. I'm not entirely sure. But what I do know for certain is that it's important to have faith, not only in him, whoever he may be, but also in ourselves, because you and me, we're worthy of love and so much more.
Okay, that's the silver lining I was looking for here. I love that. And I always tell people that too. I mean, I just told one of my neighbors who's a divorced woman, she said, do you think I'll ever get married again? I just want that perfect love. And I told her two things. One, in my mind, it's all about timing. But the first thing you have to have before timing is being open to it and thinking, this can happen for me. If there's any closed down, you know, area in your body about like, this is never going to happen or negative thoughts, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So you have to learn to that it could happen again and be positive about it. And the people who are open, and yes, you've been through some trauma and yes, it didn't feel good, but it can happen again. And I love that you put that in your book.
Thank you. And every one of us has been through some sort of trauma in our lives. You know, no one's immune to it.
Well, has anyone, anyone listening here, I mean, let's throw the divorce aside. Has anyone not had a bad breakup or been broken up with, or, you know, you were into somebody and they weren't into you? I mean, we've all been there.
Well, and I think we tend to look at every situation, every breakup. I mean, God, I can think of breakups I went through when I was younger and you're like, well, that's it. And I'm done. I'm done.
You know, right. Roll it up. Crying, we're over.
Seriously crying, listening to Dave Matthews Band, you know, like
that was our song and now it's over,
you know, and it's not easy though for everybody, you know, for some of us, I mean, for me, I started dating right away too. And that's not the case for a lot of people. A lot of people can't get there and they really don't know how to open themselves up. And I know that you're not Dr. Love, Stacey, but what would
Certainly
you say,
not.
Right? But like, just from your own experience, what would you say to those people who look at you, and I'm sure you've had people who, you know, you've known who are like, I don't know how you did that. I don't know how you opened yourself up to be loved the way you want to be loved. What do you say?
Well,
to them?
I didn't at first. I didn't know what I was doing. And I didn't know what I was looking for. I thought I was looking for one thing, but that really, you know, didn't seem to be right. Nothing quite fit. You know, you have to kind of look, it's easier to look back and see what I was doing and why I was doing it. I would always date people far away, you know, out of my neck of the woods. You know, it was like I was carrying on two separate lives.
And wait, so, you mean you were doing long distance relationships, or you dated people who you wouldn't run into people you knew when you went out with them?
Both. I've gotten on planes in the past.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's in the book too. So
wait, is that because that felt safer to you?
I guess in my mind, you know, I thought I was opening up, you know, my search, my doors, whatever you want to call it. But I think really I, was emotionally unavailable myself. So if I kept things where they really could never work out, if I dated people who were emotionally unavailable themselves, it could never work out because I think deep down I didn't really want it to work out because I wasn't ready. I had three small kids and I probably, you know, was still, you know, recovering myself. I definitely was. So you kind of have to evolve into that.
I have a very deep correlation to draw here. So everybody brace yourselves. You know, the show that renowned documentary that won so many awards called 90 Day Fiancé. I know I'm really not everybody is going to know this highly coveted show. No, I'm joking. 90 Day Fiancé on TLC. It's a total trashy show about people who get engaged to people who live overseas. And it chronicles their like love stories and whatever. But I think it's so interesting because I have watched the show. And when you look at the person who's like seeking out this relationship, they all have some kind of past trauma that they're healing from. And so I think that they pursue these relationships with people from so far away because on some level that seems safer because maybe they know that it's not going to work out. Now, I can't speak for every single couple, but that made me think of what you were just saying. That there's
it could work out.
Right. It could, but I wonder if part of the reason why people do it is because it's like, he's in Nigeria, you know?
it could work out. And it's like, if you're emotionally unavailable, like you hang your hat on that and, you know, you're looking for this dramatic ending and, you know, you think, okay, I deserve this. I want this.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it's harder to get, it must be worth more. And that is so the wrong way to think. If it's harder to get, if, you know, if I have to jump through that many more hoops, it must be more valuable. So not the case. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. You have to go at your own pace and then you're going to screw up and you're going to do things wrong and you're going to make wrong choices. God knows I've made plenty of wrong choices and move forward, onwards and upwards.
Okay. And I don't want to spoil all of the things in your book, but one of the things on that same topic that I love is that, you know, you now are good friends with your ex-husband, which is a little bit of a spoiler alert, but before we get there, I want you to touch on when you found out, this is the big spoiler alert, that your ex-husband was going to marry the lingerie woman. How did you feel?
Well, I knew it was coming. The way I found out, the way I found out, you have to read. You know, it was a little bit jolting the way I found out. He didn't tell me. I'll give you that much.
Yeah.
I knew it was coming, but it's like, it's one thing to know it's coming and then to hear it. And then all of a sudden, okay, reality's here.
Oh God. It's
again, you're faced.
Will you read that one part from your book? I think it's starting on page 160, just about, just about after. Yeah. Go ahead and share that.
Okay. It is with great sorrow, anger, indifference, or some combination of the three. I'm not quite sure. Then I announced our upcoming family edition. No, it's not a baby, yet. It's my children's stepmom. Very recently, though I can't say exactly when because I'm not privy to such information, my ex-husband became engaged to the woman he's been seeing, the woman he left me for. I heard the news from my kids. They found out as their dad passed around his iPhone at a family dinner a couple of months back, sporting a picture of his fiance's engagement ring for all to admire. I really can't complain because it's not like they didn't already have a heads up about the situation. Their future stepmom took care of that during a previous visit when, without their father present, she giddily and provokingly said to my older daughter, "I think your dad is going to ask me to marry him. What do you think I should say?" Minutes later, I was hit with a barrage of frantic texts from the backseat of their dad's car as they attempted to mask their hysterics from him. Until now, my ex-husband's significant other has held the dubious honor of being the other woman, a title that accurately denotes her well-deserved status as a homewrecker, the most unwanted of intruders. A title that categorically trumps the positions of invasive in-law and overbearing family member. Now she usurps the ubiquitous title of stepmom, devastating my children. I know there's not a damn thing I can do about it. Or is there? It's no secret to my ex-husband, his future bride, and frankly to anyone else who will listen, that my children and I aren't her biggest fans. She does things to tick the kids off, intentionally or unintentionally, I can't always be sure. And they aren't very forgiving. Neither am I, for that matter. But she keeps going about her day, living her life, and even appears happier for it, as my children become more irritated and upset. The old saying about hating a person is like drinking rat poison and expecting someone else to die is true. So really, who are the victims in this scenario? Today, I stand at a crossroads. Either I can sit back and allow my children to continue disparaging this woman, or I can facilitate her inevitable transition into their lives. These children can't help but blame their dad's fiance for destroying their parents' marriage. In reality, though, she was only a symptom, even a catalyst, but certainly not the cause. When a marriage is strong, nothing can shake it from its foundation. Ours was anything but that. I didn't get to choose the woman who will become my children's stepmom, but I can choose how I regard her publicly and ultimately affect how my children view her. I can't promise that I will ever be her friend. I'm not that progressive, but really, nobody knows what the future holds. My task is difficult. I must swallow my pride and pay a modicum of respect to a woman I disrespect and dislike. But for better or for worse, till death or divorce, do my ex-husband and her part. She will be in my children's lives.
I love that.
Wow.
I love it because it's so honest, but also it shows people that there is a choice, right? Because there's so much that you didn't have a choice over. You didn't have a choice over the fact that this happened. You didn't have a choice over the fact that you found out the way you found out. Your kids didn't have a choice in it. Your kids didn't have a choice in how they found out that they were going to get married. But then you found what you did have a choice over, which is how you're going to respond to this situation, which is ultimately how you help guide your children through this transition. And I love that you recognized that.
I'm really impressed by that too. We always say it's crucial that the parents set the stage for how the children are going to respond to these changes in their lives. And you could have easily done something way different to make yourself feel better in that moment, but you took the high road for your children's sake. And I know for a fact, because I've seen it in my cases and the evidence and the research shows it, your children are better for it.
They are, but I want to point out, I didn't always take the high road. So again,
Nobody does. Mm-hmm. You can try your best, but it's not always the easiest.
We're human.
Yep.
We're human. And, you know, she and I are not friends.
Right.
I don't speak to her. We have stood next to each other or within a few feet of each other. We do not speak. But my children obviously interact with her. And my advice is always to them, if something does come up that, you know, there's some kind of whatever, you know, statement, some kind of comment, my advice is always the same. Stay out of her way. She's the lady of the house, and just be respectful because,
yep,
again, her house, you know, it's their dad's house, but she's the lady of the house. Just be respectful and stay out of her way. You know, you can look the other way. If someone says something to you, you don't have to respond. You
right.
don't have to react.
Right.
So
I think, this is a big situation and a lot that your kids had to deal with. I want to get, this is the very last part that I'm going to have you read from the book, but I love this part because it really captures your spirit and attitude towards life. And guys, there's going to be another little spoiler alert that she's about to drop on everyone, but so good. Okay. Very last part. Let's quickly do okay. this. Stacey, can you read, I believe it's from page 219, mm-hmm. towards the very end of the book.
Okay. Earlier this month, my ex-husband became a father for the fourth time with his once mistress and now second wife, making what was at first a painful possibility a new reality for us all. I was away for the weekend when my children first received the news and, to my surprise, was more detached than I had anticipated I would be. My kids, on the other hand, felt sad and conflicted as their father described with excitement the new baby that he would be raising an ocean away as he spoke to them over FaceTime. While preparing dinner later that week for my family, as my mother had done so many years before for my younger brother and me, my son, now 10, sat at our kitchen counter playing music from his iPod. As we sang along to Ariana Grande and Justin Bieber, my two other children walked in, the older of whom stared at me wide-eyed. "What?" I asked her as I danced around the room, gesticulating to the music for added effect. "How can you act this way after so many bad things have happened to you?" she replied. I stopped to catch my breath. It was a question I had never before considered, but a question to which I now know I always had the answer. "Because," I told her, "there is a time to mourn and a time to dance."
Guys, this is the very best time for me to tell you all, go pre-order this book. We're going to have a link on Amazon for the Amazon in the show notes. The book officially comes out November 15th. Is that correct?
Correct. Stacey?
Okay, guys, get your hands on this book. There's so much in here. And honestly, there's so much more. There's so many other things that we didn't even have a chance to touch on in this interview, but I really wanted you guys to get some of the highlights. It's a book of raw honesty and hope and beauty. So much, honestly, so much.
Stacey, thank you again for coming. If our listeners want to reach out, where can they find you?
You can find me at Stacey, Stacey, at stacyfreeman.com. Or is that right? No. You can put all the social media.
We'll put it in there. Don't worry about it.
Oh my God.
Now they're not going to lip. They're not going to be typing. They're not going to be typing while you're talking.
It's 50. We blame it on the age.
We'll link everywhere where they can find you. And most importantly, we will link where they can get their hands on this.
Thank you.
Thank you so, so, so much for being here. Honestly, this was an absolute pleasure. Okay. For the 90th time, go buy that book, you guys. Go buy that book. Now, something that I want to talk about for this the end of our show, well, okay, might as well say it. For Morgan's favorite part of the show, let's be positive.
Let's be positive because we all want some positivity in our lives.
Now we're going to do Morgan's favorite part of the episode and my least favorite part while I have to scour the internet finding feel-good stories. Prior to hitting record with Stacey Freeman, we were talking about getting our hair done. We're talking about getting blowouts. Now, I know if you're a guy, this might not pertain to you, but just, you know, hang on, stay with me. Doing something little to take care of yourself weekly really boosts your mood. And I don't know if there's anything, maybe they can pump some like serotonin in that hair dryer or something, but like, we were just talking about how something as simple as getting your hair blown out for like a weekend makes you feel good. You got a little lift in your step and a lift in your roots, if you know what I'm saying. I get my hair blown out as often as I can, and it really does make me feel like $1 million. And so sometimes, especially like thinking about this episode, where there were so many moments in Stacey's life over the last several years where she probably felt really down, really isolated, really low. Whatever it is, you always have a choice. There's something that you can do to lift your mood. Maybe it's not getting a blowout. Maybe it's just going and hanging out with a friend, doing a different type of workout, right? Like if you're always a runner, maybe you change it up, do something just to like change your mindset to help you through this icky phase that you're going through.
And helping I love you it. Through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going. I love it. And I'd love, you know what you should do to make yourself feel a little better? Make a plan. So if you have no plans Friday night and you can't figure out any plans, maybe with friends or whatever, no one's around, make a plan for yourself, whether it's, okay, I'm first going to order food from this place that I love. Second, I'm going to get this new book. Third, I'm going to, you know, take a bath, whatever it is, make a plan so you have something to look forward to.
Even we're all about action steps. We are all about the action steps. And you know what, Morgan? There was a night a few years ago after you and I went out. We went out early for drinks, and then your kids and husband weren't going to be home that night, and neither were mine. And I remember we were like, well, what are you going to do? And we were like, let's order something from Uber Eats, and then let's talk about what we're going to watch on Netflix. And it sounded so cheesy, but like it was something fun to look forward to, because it's like, okay, I'm going to go home. I think I'm going to order some sushi. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to lie on my couch with a nice blanket, and I'm going to watch something.
Yeah.
Again, it goes back to you are in control over more of what you think. And guys, even you listening to this show is something that you're doing to help lift your mood. So we appreciate that. And that is exactly why we are here offering you this podcast every week.
Right. We know divorce is hard. We know it's draining. We know the unknown is scary. Our goal is to offer some guidance, action steps, and sometimes some humor. So please, everybody, visit us. Visit us on our website, HowNotToSuckAtDivorce.com. You know, come visit us on Instagram. We're pretty much on every platform now.
Everywhere. Same handle, HowNotToSuckAtDivorce. Message us if you have a question, if there's something you want to hear us talk about, if you want to know where we got our sweaters from that we were wearing last week that we kept talking about. Oh, I'm in a black sweater and you're in a black sweater. We'll answer any questions. We are here for you. Tell your friends. Tell people in your sewing circle. Tell people in your running club. Tell sewing circle. Like what is it, 1874? Tell anybody and everybody. Tell your ex. We're here to help you.
And when you're in the thick of it, it's day by day, sometimes hour by hour. But remember this, you've got this and we've got you.